Nord Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at the cholera crisis in Mozambique as the country continues to suffer the after effects of Cyclone Freddy. We'll also explore the state of tuberculosis in Africa with a discussion with Snorri Westgaard, chairman of Humana People to People. But first, an OBGYN specialist in Nigeria is sounding the alarm on endometriosis, a condition she says causes severe pain among women of reproductive age and affects their quality of life. Mike Mbonye has the story.
Endometriosis is a condition in which the endometrium tissues inside a woman's womb grow in other places. Among other things, it can cause severe pain, heavy bleeding during menstruation, and some women can have trouble getting pregnant. Rosemary Ogu is a consultant and professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Port Harcourt Teaching Hospital. She says, though endometriosis does not kill, it has a negative impact on women's reproductive health.
But it impinges negatively on your quality of life. And so you have a human being who can't walk, who is not happy, who can't do things, who is not productive because the person is going through pain. And then if you decide to say, okay, let me treat, by the time you're talking about the treatment options, whether you're using drugs, you want to go for surgery, you're having procedures, it's so expensive. So your quality of life is diminished.
The World Health Organization says endometriosis affects roughly 10% of reproductive age women and girls globally. It is estimated that more than 100,000 cases of endometriosis occur in Nigeria annually. Ogu says a study carried out by Endometriosis Support Group Nigeria, a non-profit organization, showed that 30 to 40% of women of reproductive age in Nigeria suffer endometriosis. She says the support group is involved in advocacy and trains healthcare workers.
So what the support group is doing is creating awareness, giving information, letting people know what is happening, hosting symposia, hosting meetings, training, retraining, giving information to healthcare workers so healthcare workers can treat properly, can treat effectively. Because you can't treat what you don't know. So Endometriosis Support Group Nigeria, they target healthcare workers to give them information, treatment options, and so on, so they can better take care of the patients when they come.
Ogu advises women of reproductive age with symptoms of endometriosis to see a doctor for treatment and how to manage the pains. She says endometriosis is not a death sentence, because something can be done to check the pains associated with it. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Port Harcourt.
French medical aid group Doctors Without Borders has launched the first human papillomavirus vaccination drive for schoolgirls in Malawi. They aim to reduce cervical cancer in Malawi, which has the world's second highest death rate from the disease. Lamek Masina reports from Machinga District, Malawi.
Malawi rolled out its national human papillomavirus vaccination campaign in 2019, targeting 1.5 million girls aged 9 to 14 to prevent cervical cancer. But the COVID pandemic quickly disrupted the HPV vaccine drive with shifting medical priorities and social distancing. Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by its French abbreviation MSF, this year launched a campaign to boost the low vaccine uptake by targeting girls at school.
It's easier to find this age group in schools than in a community. And at school, we have the Minister of Education, which works hand in hand with the Minister of Health. And it's easier to explain or to advocate, to mobilize these children to get to understand what is an HPV and how can they prevent it, mostly in line of a vaccine.
MSF says since January, they vaccinated about 65,000 girls in 300 schools. MSF says Malawi has the world's second largest death rate from the disease, seven times the global average with thousands dying every year. Before getting vaccinated, girls are also taught about the disease.
Health education has helped us to prepare the girls for the vaccine and to make them decide what to do on their own. As such, a lot of girls between 9 and 14 years of age volunteer to get the jabs. Some were even asking us to vaccinate them before they get consent from their parents.
Malawi in 2020 destroyed 20,000 expired doses of COVID-19 vaccines because of low uptake over myths and misunderstandings. The HPV vaccine faced the same resistance as some parents refused consent.
Their fear was that they suspected that we were vaccinating their children to make them infertile. Some suspected that we want to vaccinate their children against COVID-19 and that we have just changed the appearance of COVID-19 doses.
Malawi health officials say meetings with village chiefs and parents helped debunk those myths, and the vaccination rate has soured in the MSF drive.
We wish this support can be normalized also, so that MSF can support us each and every time when we need to have this support also on the HPV.
MSF says if there are no more disruptions, they'll keep up vaccinations to try to bring down Malawi's high death rate and maybe even one day stop cervical cancer. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Machinga District, Malawi.
Next door in Mozambique, communities continue to experience the after effects of Cyclone Freddy. According to the World Health Organization, over 1 million people face the possibility of contracting cholera, polio, or COVID-19. In addition, more than 3 million people could face food insecurity by the end of the year. Over 132 people have been admitted to cholera treatment centers in the past few days, and 350 people have received ambulatory care for cholera. After Cyclone Freddy hit Mozambique, the number of cases exploded from less than 20 a day to more than 200. Here is more with Dr. Severin von Sylander, WHO representative for Mozambique.
The numbers are sobering. More than a million people across 8 provinces are being impacted by cholera, the floods, and Cyclone Freddy. Cyclone Freddy destroyed over 132 homes and 184,000 people were displaced. Now already mostly closed accommodation centers were opened in many districts and shelter families in need. In the cyclone destroyed path, 163 health facilities were damaged. The country was hit twice by the cyclone in a matter of days, are now receding, but access to safe water and sanitation is still challenging, and about one third of the crops have been destroyed, and cholera cases are being reported from an increasing number of affected districts. While the cholera outbreaks regularly occur in Mozambique between October and April of every year, with more than 21,000 cases currently and 95 deaths, this is the largest outbreak in the last 20 years. For example, Manica province bordering Zimbabwe had not seen a case of cholera in the last 15 years. Luckily, the case fatality rate in the cholera treatment center is below the threshold of 1%, which means we are able to save lives. And I really have to acknowledge the wonderful work that the Ministry of Health is doing, deploying people that at the same time need to look after their families and meanwhile treating people.
That was Dr. Severin von Zylander, WHO representative for Mozambique. Turning now to HIV/AIDS, Uganda's former prime minister has applauded the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, for its support in fighting AIDS, saying the country cannot afford to treat patients on its own. USAID has called on the Ugandan government to put the needs of such patients at the forefront in light of the recently passed anti-homosexuality bill. For VOA, Halima Atumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
An estimated 1.2 million Ugandans aged 15 to 64 are living with HIV/AIDS and surviving on antiretroviral drugs. Almost all HIV/AIDS patients receive the drugs through financial support from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. Uganda's former Prime Minister, Ruhakana Rugunda, speaking as chief guest at celebrations to mark the 60th anniversary of the USAID partnership with Uganda, painted a picture of what HIV/AIDS was before U.S. support. Rugunda recalled that as the AIDS pandemic ravaged the country in the 1990s and early 2000s, the government had no means to afford treatment for patients.
We knew that AIDS drugs had been developed and they could control AIDS in many ways. The problem we had in Uganda was the drug is there, the people are here needing the drugs, but there is a gap. How does Uganda fill the gap? The taxpayer in Uganda, even if he or she was squeezed so hard, could not fill the gap.
In more recent years, Uganda has registered significant success in the fight against HIV, as seen in reduced HIV prevalence and a decline in new infections. USAID Uganda Mission Director Richard Nelson says his agency and its partners have prioritized HIV/AIDS for the last 20 years and are getting close to control of the epidemic, but some obstacles remain. Uganda's parliament this month passed the anti-homosexuality bill that criminalizes identifying as LGBT, mandates life in prison for gay sex, and imposes a possible death sentence for certain homosexual acts. Nelson says they are watching the bill's progress carefully because it could scare away people from seeking treatment for HIV or AIDS.
The last remaining work that needs to be done to reach epidemic control involves some of these key populations. And so if those key populations are unable to access services, if it's difficult for us to provide those services, it will really jeopardize our ability to reach our goals of eliminating HIV/AIDS by 2030.
Even before the bill was passed by Parliament, organizations providing HIV/AIDS care services were seeing people shy away from getting antiretroviral drugs. Henry Muchibi is the founder of one such group, Children of the Sun, and he spoke with VOA.
I've seen the number of people who are HIV positive. The number of people who are suppressing now is going down because now people are in fear of getting health services in public facilities.
According to the Uganda AIDS Commission, stigma, denial, discrimination, inaction, and violations of human rights continue to be major barriers to effective national responses to HIV. The anti-homosexuality bill, described by activists as deeply devastating and discriminatory, now awaits President Yoweri Museveni's veto or signature. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to tuberculosis. In Cameroon, mortality from TB is 30 people per 100,000, according to WHO. Last year, the country recorded cases of TB in children and 100 multi-resistant patients in the 292 diagnostic and treatment centers for the disease, a situation that worries the country's health authorities. Our correspondent in Yaoundé, Emmanuel Jules Tap, has more, voiced by Salem Salomon.
Cameroon's hospitals record high number of tuberculosis cases in hospitals, despite the disease being underdiagnosed, health experts say.
According to WHO estimates, we should be around 47,000 cases of tuberculosis every year, all forms included. But unfortunately, we notify every year around 25,000 cases. So for the year 2022, we have notified exactly 25,286 cases of tuberculosis, all forms included, without forgetting our little ones, who are also underdiagnosed with only 5% in Cameroon, including all forms of tuberculosis, while they are expected to be around 10%.
Initial treatment for diagnosed cases lasts 6 months when patients are unable to tolerate the effects of medication. However, in drug-resistant cases, the treatment can last up to 9 months or more.
Among our patients followed up in 2021, we had 5% of our patients who were declared lost to follow-up. We did not hear from them until the end of their treatment, after they had taken the treatment for 2 months.
And such cases require additional care and attention by healthcare providers.
It's among these patients who have developed non-compliance that we have multi-drug-resistant patients. Colleagues in the field are well enough trained to first test and see if they're still eligible for treatment of susceptible tuberculosis. Otherwise, we'll have to put them under a more complex regime which is the treatment of multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, which lasts up to 9 months, even 11 months.
Drug-resistant cases in the country are also underreported.
According to WHO estimates, in 2022, we were expected to have 350 cases of multi-resistant tuberculosis. But we have only been able to diagnose 174 cases of multi-resistant tuberculosis. And unfortunately, among these multi-resistant patients, there are some who refuse to be put on treatment. This means that out of 174 cases, there's a gap of 21% of our patients who have not responded to the call for treatment. So they remain in the wild and continue to contaminate the population. With this, we are really at risk.
The country has introduced a protocol in 2021 whenever there are drug-resistant cases.
We are called to monitor patients during 4 months of hospitalization in the intensive phase so that the treatment is well followed. 4 months during which he takes his treatment, fasting under the supervision of the nursing staff. After the 4 months of the intensive phase, the patient is called to follow the last 5 months of his treatment in an ambulatory health center near his home. There will be no more injections in this protocol because it has been withdrawn according to the latest recommendation of WHO, which gives a chance to our patients to follow this treatment well and to be declared cured at the end of the process.
The government has made tuberculosis treatment free of charge with assistance from donors and partners.
The treatment of tuberculosis in Cameroon is already accessible throughout the national territory in our 3,027 diagnostic and treatment centers. It's a treatment that lasts 6 months of the pharmacosensitive form with 2 months of intensive phase and 4 months of continuation phase. During the intensive phase, the patient is called to take one tablet, which is a combination of four tablets. And during the continuation phase, he's called to take two tablets, combined into one.
Cameroon's national plan states that the country hopes to eradicate the disease by 2035.
What innovations and new solutions can help move the needle further in the fight against TB? For more on the subject, I spoke with Snorre Westgaard, chairman of Humana People to People. Take a listen.
Yeah, tuberculosis or in modern times was kind of discovered and how to treat it some 140 years ago. So this has been going on for, you know, the fight against TB has been going on for many, many years. And in the last 2 decades, we have had remarkable progress. The number of people dying from TB and the number of people having TB disease had gone down actually dramatically in the last 2 decades. But unfortunately, now this good record has changed during the pandemic. So in the past 2 years, we have again seen that the numbers have risen. Last year, around 1.6 people died from TB, and there are currently more than 10 million people who have TB disease globally. And as you said, yes, Africa is one of the most continents most affected because it's mainly in low and middle income countries that are affected by TB. And one of the reasons is also because there has been developed of new strains of drug resistance TB. So while drugs have been developed and successfully treat TB, unfortunately, these new strains of drug-resistant TB has also come forward.
So you talked about drug-resistant TB. What is fueling this?
Drug-resistant TB in the start developed because people did not adhere strictly to the medication. That's also why the main strategy for TB is, for many years, what was called DOTS, which is direct observed therapy. So that, you know, people came to the centers to get their medicine every day, but that is very difficult for people to do that. So people got their medication, they take it at home, the help of family members and so on. But still, because at times people get nauseous, especially if you have little food, if you are malnourished or, you know, you don't have enough nutritious food, then you don't feel very well taking the medication and many people dropped out. Because of dropping out and then maybe going back again on treatment or a second drug, then and then dropping out again, this developed drug resistance in the TB strains. And then, unfortunately, a person can pass a drug-resistant strain to another person, you know, a new infection. So that is a big problem. But the good news is that the WHO, together with scientists, have developed and companies have developed new drugs that are shorter in the regimen, is shorter to take against drug-resistant TB. So there's hope that it will be more easy to cure drug-resistant TB in the future. Because now when you are drug-resistant, you have a drug-resistant TB, it's a very, you know, long regimen. You have to take lots of pills and you have to do it for a long time. And that is often difficult for people to do.
World TB Day was on March 24th with the theme, Yes, We Can End TB. When we look at some of the challenges with the increase of drug-resistant TB, for example, the impact of HIV and other challenges, what innovative solutions are available or can be tapped into to help curb the incidence of TB?
In the past few years, some new innovations have come up in diagnostics. So, you know, new microscopes, better way of detecting the TB, mobile X-rays, smaller X-rays that can be taken out in the community to take X-ray of people. That is one thing. But also this, actually in connection with the World TB, WHO also came out with different kind of new drugs, the new regimens. As I said, that will be easier to take for people and shorter, you know, shorter time span, and also drugs for children. That will be easier for children to take because of, as you know, everywhere children are also affected by TB. And then I think what is also important and what you can say what we represent in Humana People to People is also that one way of tackling, call it innovation or not, but you know, you really need to engage the community and the people that are close to people who are suffering from TB, because people need support. And as long as, you know, your family support you or peers support you, then it's easier for people to get through the treatment and maintain the treatment and successfully get treated for TB, because it is a treatable disease. That's a good thing. Of course, as you mentioned, HIV is also a factor of increase in TB, because it's often a co-infection. But again, if people adhere to the antiretroviral treatment regimen and then at the same time also take their TB drugs, they can be curable. Not cure of HIV, but the HIV can be managed and TB can be cured.
So you talked about the role of communities. How can community members be an integrated part of the solution in TB control?
First of all, you know, communities should be aware so they can, they know that TB is a curable disease. So they can, it's also a preventable disease. So people should be aware of it. And then when somebody in the community gets the disease, it's important that they are supported. The whole family should be tested because there's a risk that they have been infected. Then, and also the person who then is tested positive and access treatment of TB, they need support to carry through the treatment, to adhere to the exact times you should take the pills and so on. So this is important. So you can say both in preventing and support to people having TB disease, and then making sure that everybody who is suspect, because one of the main challenges also in treating or in ending TB is to find the last people. You know, it's not everybody who are detected. There are many people who are not detected because they don't know, they don't have the awareness that what to do, you know, they think the cough is because of something else. And it's very important that the community support those that are mobilized, are part of the mobilization, you know, that if you have symptoms, you should take a test. Our experience is that, you know, for example, in the countries where we work, we have reached around over 3 million people with information about TB. And then, you know, maybe 10% of those actually have symptoms. And then 10% of those, 10-12% of those with symptoms test positive. So, you know, even if you cough or you show symptoms, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have TB, but it's very important that you come forward and you take a test. Because then once you test 100 people, maybe around 12 of them will actually have TB. I mean, those who show symptoms when they are interviewed or when they are talked to. So that's why community mobilization and outreach is very important to find those who do not think it necessary to go for testing. And then, through a diagnosis, you can say identification, those who are suspected, they go for testing, and then you find who is actually have TB disease.
When we think about the people in rural communities, how is Humana people-to-people ensuring that some of these innovations are accessible to populations in rural area?
We work together with the National TB Program, and the National TB Program have networks. But of course, as you know, in some of the countries and some of the villages, the clinics, the health facilities are limited. So it's a question of reaching out to those communities who do not normally access the health services and provide the services, at least the diagnostic services, to the communities. And then when people test positive, they, of course, have to go to the clinic to confirm their diagnosis and to get access to drugs. And then we can help with that. You know, there is transport facilities, there are different ways of supporting the communities. So the international communities, we often have support for organizations like USAID or CDC or other partners who are helping the countries to reach the goal of eradicating TB or stopping TB. And then we are kind of the link between the international community, the national TB services, and the last mile community who does not access automatically those services, but need help and need outreach.
Before we wrap, when we look at the future of innovations for tuberculosis control and the current challenges in prevention and treatment, to you, what should be the priorities moving forward?
Yeah, I think we should listen to WHO. They actually have very good priorities and they know what they're talking about when it comes to TB. So one of the new innovations, you can say, is this about preventive treatment, because there are, in cases of children, in cases of families, two people who are infected by TB or have TB disease, then sometimes preventive treatment is a way to prevent that more people in that near family get TB disease. So that is an innovation, and which is introduced in some countries, in some connection. But all this costs money, because medication costs money, the diagnostics cost money. So it's also about mobilizing necessary funds. So we have global fund for TB, HIV, AIDS, TB, and malaria. The international community, they have donated some money. Their goal was 30 million, it's not yet reached. So, the developing countries should also come up with more money so they can support, so that we reach the goal, because it's actually possible. There are players in the field who can do the work. We know how to do it. It's a question of doing it. And as the theme says for the World TB Day 2023, it's, yes, we can stop TB. So we can. Question of investing enough resources and energy, and also doing it together, everybody putting their heads and hands together.
Any final word, Snorri Westgaard?
Yeah, I think it's very important that when you think of people, that do not access treatment, sometimes there are many different reasons. There can be stigma, there can be, the way they, where they are, what kind of profession they have. It's many different things. And I think it's very important to fight stigma and discrimination, just like we did, or we do with HIV/AIDS. We should also do with TB, though TB is a much more curable disease, and therefore doesn't really, that stigma and discrimination that you find around HIV/AIDS is sometimes it's a bit, you can say, why is it there with TB? But it is there sometimes. Maybe also because its co-infection is there. So I think it's very important to fight stigma. And this is a disease that we all need to, address heads on and together with the communities. And we have seen that the community, they have enormous willpower and they have the capacity to help each other, when they are shown the way. So, or when somebody is there with them, together with them, to work with them. So I think, so that's my final word. I think we can stop TB when we involve the community.
Snorri Wascar, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host.